आज कई सालों से, मतलब ये आग एक साल छूट रहा था, दूसरे साल फिर आग लग जा रही है।
It is perhaps the deadliest forest fire that Uttarakhand has seen in nearly a decade. More than 1,600 acres said to be ablaze, more than 1,500 villages hit, with 6,000 personnel trying to douse that fire. Entire hillsides are on fire today. Sonal Mehrotra now reports from Uttarakhand on how this disaster began and how it is spreading.
The forests of Uttarakhand on fire for over a week now, burning day and night. The flames have spread to over 1,900 hectares, causing massive devastation. Forest destroyed, people and animals affected.
तीन रात हम बिल्कुल सोए नहीं। अरे आग में मरते मरते बच गए, गाय की बच्चा एक यहाँ आई थी।
गाय का बछड़ा था यहाँ पर फंस गया था।
फंस गया कि साहब वो जल ही गया, बल्कि मर गया बेचारा।
वहाँ पर एक औरत है जिनको अपना घर बचाते बचाते जल गई वो।
हाथ जल गया उनका और काफी कोशिश के बाद फिर उसको हमने शो करा।
The Prime Minister's office has sought information on the fires. Over 130 personnel of the National Disaster Response Force sent in. The number of state personnel fighting the fire has been doubled to over 6,000. Forest fires are not new to the state, but this year it began early and on a huge scale. Over 900 incidents since early February.
Travelling across Uttarakhand, this is what one encounters. Burning patches of fire and smoke all across the road. And in certain patches, patches like these, where trees are still on the burn, logs have come, have broken down and fallen on the road. Crops, homes, livelihoods, animals, completely destroyed. And what's left of them is this, still hot from perhaps fire from last night. All of these things now charred beyond recognition. They're all now hoping and praying that the rain gods show mercy, the wind gods show mercy, and the forest fire can die a natural death.
For the forest, we cannot go near a forest fire because at this stage even the entire tree is burning and it is beyond 800 to 1000 degrees. My request to people is just don't leave any unattended fires anywhere.
These satellite images of the Indian Space Research Organization show 53 active forest fires in Uttarakhand. But the hill regions of three other states, Himachal, Uttar Pradesh and Jammu and Kashmir, have been affected as well.
The gorgeous lush hills of Uttarakhand are on fire, up in smokes. It's not just killed and burnt people and animal and gutted completely houses and livelihoods. It's filled the entire region in smoke, putting the visibility so low that it's become really difficult for the authorities who are trying to fight out the fire at several locations. There's not much they can do to douse it completely, but the big question now is, could this have been avoided? In Uttarakhand, with camera person Ashwini, I'm Sonal Mehrotra for NDTV.
Well, I hope to go across to Sonal live from Uttarakhand in just a little while from now. But joining us here in the studio, Kalyan and Anita Paul, they run an NGO called the Pan-Himalayan Grassroots Development Foundation. They are from Uttarakhand. They live there and, are looking at ecological issues in particular in the state. Pramod Bhaseen, the founder of GenPact, also joins us tonight. Mr. Bhaseen's friends are living there and are witnesses to the kind of fires that we're seeing currently in the state. But Anita Paul, to you first, you were actually there at your home in Ranikhet when you saw these fires begin over a week ago. Now, this happens every year, but this year it's been massive. What did you see?
Yes, Nidhi. I mean, living in the hills, we had kind of got used to the idea that if come summer or actually come late February, this is going to be a feature that we are going to be living and working towards, trying to manage the forest fires. But I think this year what has happened is we've had a very long spell of dry spell and things have gone out of hand. Now the fact is that, you know, forest fires are man-made. That's a well-known fact because there's only small percentage, maybe 10% or so, of global fires that are caused by natural reasons, maybe lightning or some other reasons for natural combustion to happen. Now, but the fact is, yes, they are man-made, but it could be due to various reasons. And people like us who are living in the mountains, we have to deal with it because because what has happened is pine has crept up very close to human habitation, which means that you are scared of sleeping in your homes and having a fire raging in your backyard.
And that's more combustible. And that's why it's because
of the fact that pine needles are combustible, it's making our task a little more difficult to handle.
Well, Kalyan Paul, you describe to us, I mean, how have the scenes of these fires been different this year than what you've seen in the past few years?
See, this year, as Anita was saying, we've had a very dry spell because this winter we had no rains at all. For almost 5 months, there's been no rain. But each year, actually, this is almost, I mean, next year will be 30 years of our lives in the mountains, you know. And each year is getting worse and worse and worse. And what's more important is, you know, why these fires happen. That's something we should figure out. And each year, when the fires become like the way it has become now, it becomes news for a while. And then the monsoon comes and people forget about it because everything turns green again. Now, the real reasons why these fires happen year after year, and some years are really bad, like this year, it was something like that about 10 years ago, is because of the pines, the monoculture of the pines. You see the forests of Kumau and Garhwal and in many other parts. What's the legacy? I mean, they were all taken away from the communities during the colonial era. And the unfortunate part is that legacy still continues. You know, 10% of the land actually belongs to the communities. And the rest of the land belongs to the Department of Forests. So the state of the forest is intricately linked with the management policies of the forest department, because the land belongs to them, the entire forest, right? And so it's been debated for many, many years now amongst civil society and even with the government people that it's time that the pines were systematically removed from our land and replaced with broadleaf native species like the oaks. And that is really the point which needs to be debated, that how do we get rid of the pines?
Before I come to Mr. Basin, how are people dealing with this? Are people running away? Are they running away from their homes? How are they dealing with this? Because you're seeing entire hillsides in flames.
To the best of my knowledge, actually, you know, if you look at your TV coverage also, it's the communities who are going around bare and along with a branch or something like that, trying to douse fire. So it is the people, I mean, their lives, their livelihoods, their forests, their homes, that, you know, they are going around. Women play a huge role in trying to get their act together, especially in those areas where they have been engaged in kind of reforesting the common lands. They have a passion attached to it, so, you know, they get galvanized into action. But what is sad is, you know, that you see it, you are passionate about, or you feel helpless sometimes, you feel passionate about doing something, but then you kind of end up being a mute spectator and hope that something
because you
happens.
Feel helpless.
You feel so helpless about
it. Mr. Basin, can you describe to us, you know, because we heard from you earlier today, you know, your friends who are there, your colleagues who are there with homes in the state, they've been sending back very disturbing pictures and scenes of what is going on. I think we've lost that line to Mr. Pramod Basin. But, you know, Mr. Kalyan Paul, let me ask you about a Facebook post, which you may have seen today that has been doing the rounds, to use that term, it's gone viral, of the citizens who live there, who've been living there, of German descent in the state.
The Smetechs.
Yes. Yeah. And they have said that it is the forest mafia. Hmm. It is the timber mafia that is responsible where basically there is this nexus between locals who are burning the trees so that they can sell their land to builders, and this horrible nexus has been created, and that is why you see a much larger scale devastation this time.
You see, I mean I can't exactly report about this linkage, but let's just go one step behind this. So you have this huge amount of monoculture pine trees, as I was saying. Now Uttarakhand still has a policy of contractual agreements for tapping the pine resin, okay, and this happens in the summer months, okay. Now, when you tap pine resin, it's said that if the forest is set on fire, the flow of the resin is more. So, typically, a contract is, say, for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So, if you are the contractor, you'd like to get the maximum resin out of the forest in that time. And therefore, it is said that there is a linkage between people who are involved with tapping pine resin and the beginning of forest fires.
But you don't see this as the large-scale reason, as this post seems to suggest, that this is the real reason why you have such massive fires this time.
Well, it you know, one has to see how many plots of pieces of forest land has been contracted out this year, particularly for pine resin tapping. So those figures will be available with the PCCF of the
Okay, well, we have Mr. Pramod Bhaseen back with us. Sorry to lose your line earlier there, Mr. Bhaseen, but I was just asking you, you were telling us about what your friends and colleagues there with homes there who are staying there currently in the state and the kind of disturbing scenes and pictures that they've also been sending about the massive scale of these fires.
Nidhi, it's really horrifying, frankly quite terrifying for people living there. I can't begin to think of what it's like for all the villagers whose homes are threatened, because the scale of this fire now is virtually a national disaster. You know, this is no longer small fires which burned in the summer. It's very been very dry, as our other members here said. There's very little water. Frankly, the scale of it is so huge that even though 6,000 people have been deployed, certainly around where we are, where my colleagues are currently, for instance, Saurabh Srivastava, people like that are sitting in their homes right now, there's very little water to douse the fire, nor is there much technology or awareness. You know, there's a lot of issues around awareness of people as to the fact that you can't set fires now so easily. Burning forests is a bad thing because it'll go out of control. People still think you can burn a forest, part of the forest, and control it and rejuvenate it. And the scale of this disaster is now getting worse. So, you know, when I'm talking to my friends live all the time, and they are watching from their homes, the entire hillside ablaze. There's smoke, there's no visibility, you can't see the hill in front of us. And the fire is coming up right up to people's homes. So people are actually terrified because they're waiting there to say, you know, can we douse it? Can we get water tankers? How do we control this fire? It's become a huge issue, and I think it points to what the future may hold for us. In many of our hills, with the pine needles and the other issues that these experts are talking about, because
I'm actually
we
surprised.
Need
you
much
know,
better...
You know, I'm just taking off from what you said. Are you also surprised, as even I am, I mean, as a journalist, that this isn't something that's occupied the front pages and the national media headlines? I mean, we've, you know, taken it up in a big way today, but it sounds very scary, you know, what we're hearing from the state now. And as you say, it's been there for nearly a week or more, and it just hasn't occupied that, you know, that national alarm yet.
Nidhi, it's been amazing for us because, you know, I wrote in this morning early to NDTV, and I'm actually delighted as to how fast you people have responded with the stories. Saurabh had also written it. But the fact is that this doesn't seem to hit the media. The local elections are hitting the media. Everything else is hitting the media. You know, Vijay Mallya is hitting the media. This is a national disaster. It's an ecological disaster in front of us at a time of climate change and at a time when pollution is increasing. It's unhealthy at this point in time. And we cannot begin to understand why something that is threatening the lives of so many, not just the lives, but the livelihoods of so many villagers, isn't getting a hell of a lot more media coverage. I'm not sure what it takes to get everyone's attention. Obviously, NDTV has responded fantastically well just now. But, you know, this has been going on for 2 weeks. And there have been 900 cases of fires being reported. This is not the first fire. And if you look at your own pictures,
absolutely,
the scale of this is amazing.
Right. Well, Anita Paul, that brings me to the question of solutions. So what are the three things that, for instance, the government there needs to do, short-term, long-term?
Yeah, Nidhi, thanks for asking this question, because I think, you know, our belief is that ecological security is actually an essential condition to remove poverty alleviation is one side of the story. Second side is that, you know, the 10 Himalayan states, the Indian Himalayan region is actually 10 full states and some hilly districts of Assam and a little bit of Bengal, Darjeeling essentially. Now the beauty is that this chain, you know, of this long chain, which is the pride of a nation, actually has not got enough sufficient focus in the planning process of our country, you know. And what it does to 300 million plus people who live downstream is amazing. So my point is that it's time that we focused on this. It's not just the people, it's not, you know, if you look at the people, it may be just 5% of the total country's population. But that's not the point. We've got 70% of the biodiversity hotspots, and we are sitting on the water reservoirs, which is completely a ecosystem service provided by the forests. So instead of just looking at extraction, what can we value our forest for the other ecosystem services that it provides, and start developing policies around it, you know, which is because mountains matter for everybody. It's not just for the people who live in the mountains. It's equally important for people living in Delhi and other places. So I think the government has recognized its importance. They have kind of recognized in the National Action Plan for Climate Change that mountains are important. We need a desk now which is going to get activated.
To implement that.
To implement it, to get proactive, to engage with civil society, to come up with policies. It's not that we don't know.
What
you know, it's just that we don't do it.
All right, Sonal Mehrotra is joining us live now, in fact, from the site, I believe, of another fire that has just been spotted near where she is. Sonal, what's the latest from where you are exactly?
Well, Nidhi, we come to you from Bhavali and we are late in the bulletin because we are travelling all the way trying to get you some live shots of some fresh fire which has broken out here. But unfortunately, because of the massive smoke all around, you can't really see much even if you try to zoom in. However, you know, I can just smell smoke, very fresh smoke right in the air all around me. And it's clearly baffling why. Because right in the evening today, we've had fresh sorties of NDRF doing the rounds, helicopters doing the rounds of the hills here today, trying to pour in water to try and douse the fire. Remember, the NDRF came in here yesterday, almost 8 days after the fire has been on, and many people out here are saying it's too little too late. And many people like Peter here, who are joining me, who's an activist here, who's been working in the forest for the forest of Uttarakhand for quite a while now, for 30 years he says, believes that this is too little too late and that we are addressing the wrong issue here. Is that true?
I do think that we, the governor's meeting recently held to tackle the forest fire problem has been tackling the wrong issues. They're talking about increasing manpower to douse the flames, whereas the Indian Penal Code provides for action against the perpetrators of the crime. The crime
Peter,
being
the question at this point very clearly is, was this man-made or is this a natural disaster?
It is very clearly a man-made disaster.
Why do you say that? A premeditated
man-made disaster, for the simple reason that entire landscapes are going up in smoke within hours. No natural fire does that. I have fought fires for more than 40 years.
Okay, I spoke with the the forest department today, department heads here. They are saying very categorically it's been induced. It could have been induced by people, but it's an innocent act. You are saying it's an orchestrated attempt by a lobby to ensure that the forest goes up in burn?
Some of it is orchestrated, some of it is accident. But whatever it is, setting fire to a forest is a penal offence and it should be prosecuted by the police. Forest Department officials are the wrong people to talk about it because they cannot do anything about it. Setting fire to a forest is a criminal offence under Section 435 of the Indian Penal Code. And
how
it should
can
be
you
treated
say
as such.
For with such surety that this has been set up by people, that this is the lobby?
There is no record for natural forest fires in the Himalaya.
But there's been fire every year.
It has been.
Why is it that only this year it's gone to the proportion that it did?
It goes to this proportion regularly, but people don't record it. They don't report it. They ignore it. And they take it as assumed. Earlier, forest the villages used to come to douse the flames. In the 80s, the flames used to stay doused. Nowadays, the fire catches again as soon as the villagers go home. That is set.
What about then the very argument that everybody's been giving and even the forest department has been giving, that a lot of villagers do it because they want the dry grass to go away and a fresh one to come up?
In that case, grassy hillsides are set on fire, not forests. Grass does not grow in forests, and what we are addressing here is a question of forests being set on fire, not grassy hillsides being set on fire.
All right, so a lot of questions unanswered here, Nidhi, as we come to you, from these hills where fresh fire is still, coming up from these regions. Clearly, there are two sets of divide, but the big question again, is this man-made or is this a natural disaster? But what everybody has been saying at this point is that there should have been, mechanisms in place to ensure that it doesn't happen in the first place, because unlike any other disaster, once a forest fire starts, there's very little one can do. I've been given examples by the department people. Case of a flood, you can go in and help people. In case of a forest fire, one just, has to stand and watch and hope that it rains. So that's what people out here are doing.
That's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
Sorry, if you could ask Peter that question. That's an important point he wants to clarify, Sonal. He's saying it's not a helpless situation. Just let's hear what he has to say on that.
Yeah.
Peter, many are saying that this is not a helpless situation, unlike what the authorities are also saying. They're saying there can be something done. What is it that can be done now to salvage the situation?
Police can, the local intelligence units can discover who the arsonists are. The police can prosecute them. The judiciary can convict them. And that is the end of the forest fire problem.
That's the end of the problem, but how do we stop that now?
They can start now. They can start tomorrow.
All right. Peter's clearly convinced that it's all happening for a lobby, and he's saying that, you know, perhaps authorities need to step up and penalize those who are responsible behind it.
All right. Well, that's certainly an important aspect. I think certainly an important aspect of why this is happening, apart from the fact that as we've heard here as well, that it's a combination of other factors as well, and all of this coming together has led to what is perhaps the worst kind of fire we've seen in the state in nearly a decade. Thank you very much to all of you for joining us tonight. We're going to move on to the Augusta chopper scam now. The CBI today questioned the former Deputy Air Chief J.S. Gujral for more than 8 hours in the case. He will be called again for questioning. NDTV, meanwhile, has accessed documents which reveal details of how the key middleman in the case, Christian Michael, was helped by some of his Indian associates in selling the VVIP chopper deal. Tanima Biswas now joins us for more on that. Tanima, what more do we know about the Indian connection to all of this?
Right, Nidhi, as you were mentioning, that we have accessed these documents from the Enforcement Directorate. It's the attachment order which gives out details of the investigation which they've done so far, essentially talking about Indian associates of Christian Michel, one of the key Italian middlemen, and how he managed to crack that VVIP chopper deal. Three people essentially. Firstly, R.K. Nanda, who's a travel agent on paper, but was actually purchasing and selling Benami properties here in Delhi, in the National Capital Region, on behalf of Christian Michel. Again, at Christian Michel's behest, he had opened a shell company, Media Exim Private Limited. That was essentially the one which was used in order to carry out these transactions, a lot of illegal transactions, which the ED believes, illegal money being pumped in via Dubai to India. And again, this purchase and sale of properties, that money was again routed out to Dubai after Christian Michel left the country in 2012 by R.K. Nanda. J.B. Subramaniam, again another co-director who was hired by Christian Michel in this company, he was hired in order to give information on a daily basis about procurements of aircrafts and helicopters by the Indian Air Force as well as by the Civil Aviation Ministry, because that was the key interest area for Christian Michel, and that was the intelligence gathering process he was following. And another key associate, Narendra Bahadur, who was the driver of Christian Michel, he had informed the Enforcement Directorate that once he had picked up a few people who were guests of Christian Michel and dropped them to a farmhouse in Scenic Farms, which belonged to Sanjeev Tyagi, the cousin brother of former Air Chief S.P. Tyagi. And another crucial link is established there. So these Indian associates have been questioned by the Enforcement Directorate, gave a lot of information. Now what we have to see is, of course, what the ED manages to get in their questioning of the former Air Chief S.P. Tyagi when he's been summoned next week. Nidhi?
All right, Tarima, thanks very much for that. That's it on the 9 o'clock news tonight. We'll be back with more headlines in about 30 minutes from now. Thanks for watching.